one thing people search on a lot to get to my website is the difference between spirituality and religion. Religion is kind of giving outer rules, outer ideas, outer teachings. And spirituality is the awakening of your inner wisdom. And a lot of people today are, anti-religion because of the problems that have taken place in the various religions. Every religion probably has had some problems. And we have a church not far from my house that had this big sign hanging for about a year that said, "Spiritual but not religious, so are we." And people ask, what religion are you, And I feel that rather than being not religious, I'm all religions, and I'm spirituality, which is beyond all religions. Spirituality, in my view, it's beyond philosophy. It's beyond, it's like the truth of the universe. It's beyond anything we can know. And so once you're kind of focusing on that, then you can enjoy aspects of the religion. And as I say in one section of the book, you have to be a good editor. I learned to edit videotapes while living in the ashram. And, you cut out the footage that's not useful for that piece. The footage may be useful for another piece. It doesn't mean it's horrible footage. Sometimes it's shaky and you're never going to use it. But, when you're listening to teachings of your own path or any other path, If I say something and then you think, "Hey, that's a cool idea, I like that," and then I say something else and you say, "No, I don't like that," then just sweep away the second and focus on the first, and do that wherever you go. A few years ago, I spent 3 years going every Sunday to a different house of worship, just part of my exploration process, because I hadn't had that much exposure. So I went to many churches of, Catholic, Christian, Methodist, Presbyterian, Theosophist, Quaker, Rosicrucian, churches of religious science, Christian Science, Baptist, Evangelical churches, Church of Christ, non-denominational, Unity, Unitarian, New Age, gay New Age, and a place called Dance Church. Yeah, I enjoyed all of them. A couple made me more sleepy than others. There were a couple where I was praying to stay awake. "Oh, Lord, help me not snore, please." But there was an essence that was that worked through all of them. I could relate to each of them. And I had to edit out. There was one very, very right-wing evangelical church I went to, and they had great music. They had one of the famous bands. They had money, And they had this really famous band playing, and I thought, this is great. And then the guy, he started talking all politics, and he was quoting, there was that big tsunami, and he was saying, "As God said in the Bible, this is why he did it, and he did it for this, and he did this." And he said, "He did it so we can bring the gospel there. That's why God made the tsunami." And maybe, I don't know why God does anything. I'm not claiming to know. He was. And he said, these people, do you believe these people in these countries? They worship an elephant-faced God. And I thought, well, don't go on my chanting page or you'll see him. But I didn't take offense, because when you're anchored in spirituality, you don't have to take offense. And I didn't even think, "Oh, you ignorant," I just... Okay, you believe this, you believe this, you believe this, you believe this. I'm not responsible for that. I'm responsible for my own spiritual growth. And if there's anything I can offer to anyone else, then I'm responsible for that. But not for the choices other people make. One problem with religions is they tend to bring dogma, and they're not always dogma from the source. Religions are usually built around a great being who had a spiritual experience, who experienced oneness with God, who experienced these high realms, and was moved to share it, to create a doctrine, to create a monastic path, different things, so that to help other people attain it. But then you get the board of directors and the committees, and I've watched it happen, and they can, they can ruin things. They can, and even me. One time, I was editing a video, and there was going to be a program for children. This was in the ashram. And I was in the middle of focus on a video, and someone called on the phone, and I was like, not really paying attention. They said, "Do you have a quote from Muktananda, our guru, about children. And I said, you know, oh, well, you know, he said something like, you know, everybody's a child of God, the divine light exists in everyone's heart. Uh-huh, cell phone. And, oh, it's the cameraman. So I just said this. I wasn't really paying attention to, you know, I thought they were saying, was there any kind of quote? And I said, yeah, he said something like this. And about a month later, I was editing again. It was my service. And a friend came in with his two kids who had been in this children's program. And they came up to the editing room, and one of them said, look what I got. And it was a picture of our guru with my quote under it, coming from him. Oops. And it was a fine quote, and he would have said it, and he probably did, and he said things like it. But it was just such a clear example of how it happens. And imagine 2,000 years worth of that, you know. So there's a story, actually, about a monastery where Guru would give lectures and, you know, very wonderful talks, and the monks would all sit around. And they had a cat in the monastery. And, you know, cats would jump around from lap to lap and want to play like mine always does. Wakes me up every morning jumping into bed with a different toy. And I reach out, like, what toy do we have today to play with? You know. And so the cat was jumping around during the teachings, and the guru said, you know, you should tie the cat outside while we're having our meetings. So every day at 6 o'clock, one of the monks would take the cat and just tie with a leash outside. And time went on. Eventually, the guru died. And they continued having programs. There was another successor to the guru giving lectures, and they still tied the cat up at 6 o'clock. And then that cat died. So they got another cat and tied that up. And 100 years later, the doctrine of this path was written up. And it said, every monastery must tie a cat outside during all of the worship services. And so it was. And that's what our world is made up of, a whole lot of silly ideas, not just in religion, but everywhere. You know, I was in the airport coming from, I think, San Francisco yesterday, and a guy behind me had his laptop computer, and he was talking about, I could never go anywhere without it. I said, oh, are you on Facebook? Because I'm on Facebook now. And he said, no, I don't like people. And I was like, wait, that's my line. People say, are you a guru? No, I don't like people enough to be a guru. And I live kind of a reclusive life, you know. And he said, yeah, you know. I said, I know. They're all crazy, aren't they? I said, and yet, here we are. It's like being in the insane asylum, saying, these people are all nuts here. You know, here we are. We're human beings, too. So we're part of a very strange species. Some of the sages say we're the crown of all creation. I don't know about that. I would like to think there's something more, something better, maybe not on the physical plane. And then, so each religion, they have all these different rules, and there's a sect of Jains, and I remember some of them visited my guru once, and they wear cloth over their mouth, and as they walk, they sweep the ground before each step, because they don't want to breathe in any tiny insects that you can't see, and they don't want to step on any tiny creatures, because that's bad karma. And that's how they go through their whole life. Now imagine if they're right. How many karmas you've created just by walking and breathing, much less everything else you've done, you know? So that's why the idea of karmas is you create, your actions create a reaction in the universe. It's not clear cut, you know. You see a lot of bad people making a lot of money. So you don't know how, you know, exactly how, and a lot of good people, not. But then there's happiness too, and there's many other things, and there's a long life, and who knows what else, and maybe other lifetimes. I don't know how it all works. You know, we don't know everything. We can't know everything. And but you can have pure intention and pure motives. And I think that's the approach. You know, life is a mystery. Spirituality is a mystery. And it should be. You know, if any of these teachers or anyone tells you, this is exactly how it works, you have to, if you do this, this happens three lifetimes from now. This will, you know, either they're foolish or they're trying to fool you. You know, there needs to be the humility of being a dummy. You have to know that you don't know. In fact, there's an ancient scripture from India that says, yasya matam tasya matam matam yasya navedasaha. He who thinks he knows, knows not. He who thinks he knows not, truly knows. And my interpretation of the second line is, because if you think you know not, you're right. Right? Joseph Campbell said, God is a metaphor for that which transcends all levels of intellectual thought. So you can try in every moment to interact with God, to deal primarily with God. So if you're trying to get a job and you're going to talk to the interviewer, set your consciousness first and see the universal presence of spirit, of God, and talk to that through the interviewer. It's the friend behind every friend. It's the friend behind every enemy. And if you can live in that, then you're a sage, you know? You're living in this world, but not of it. You go through the waves, the ups and downs, but you're steady at the same time. You know, you might even get angry. One time my guru was kind of going through the ashram and yelling at her, this is dirty, and going through the kitchen, these, you know, pans should be cleaned better, and this, you know, this should be cleaned up, and, you know, really, everyone was scared, and he had a stick in his hand, and, you know, this is India, and one of the monks was kind of hiding around the door where he was going to come out, because she didn't want to be next, and he came out, and he looked around the door and saw her, and he said, how did you like the show? You know, they say that a great being will still get angry, but then let go of it. It's just gone. You don't have to hold on to it. It doesn't have to ruin your whole day. Someone may cut you off. You may say, you're an idiot, you know. And not me. I would never say such a thing. Hey, it's out of order, but I'm going to sing it. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. So I just sang the first line of that because I wanted to bring up another point. This idea that everything must be positive. The positivity police, New Agers. Oh, dummies. It's negative. You're putting something negative with something positive. Oh, he used the word I too many times in his email, you know. I mean, believe me, in an ashram you meet them all. All the New Agers. And you know, you shouldn't say this, you shouldn't say that. And then one time, a couple years ago, I was part of a panel on spirituality in America for the Sun Valley Film Festival. And I was going to be giving a concert that night. And I was speaking with some wonderful scholars, Matthew Fox, have you heard of him? He's a real character. The Pope doesn't like him. Said he was a derelict or something like that. We were driving in the car one time. He was telling me that. I said, well, when you redo your memoir, you put that as like an endorsement. I was going to be giving a concert that night, and Matthew said to me, he asked me what I'm going to sing, and I gave him the list, and one of them was Amazing Grace. And he said, promise me you're not going to sing Wretch. And I'm like, first of all, the guy who wrote it was a slave trader. I mean, the whole point of the song is that grace saved a wretch like him. And the point of my life is God saved a wretch like me. You know, if I didn't always act wretched, I sure could have. We all have the seed of wretchedness in us. and thank God for the grace that lifts us up out of being wretches and naturally gives us virtues. You know, that's what I taught in Spirituality for Dummies. I list some of what I feel are important spiritual virtues: honesty, humility, compassion, gratitude, a bunch more. And the point that I try to make is, you know, yes, you can try to practice these things. That's good, to make an effort to be honest, to make an effort to have compassion, and to, you know, okay, every morning I'm going to write down, you know, what I'm thankful for today. Very good. Gratitude is magical. You know, gratitude can change your whole life. But when you are unfolding spiritually into the higher consciousness, when your smaller consciousness is unfolding to the higher consciousness, these virtues are the only thing that makes sense. You know, you can't be mean. You can't harm somebody. You can't not be generous. You know, you can't not be honest, because it hurts. It hurts to not tell the truth. It hurts to try to deceive someone. You would never rip anybody off. You know, you would rather be cheated than to cheat anybody else. And that's how I feel also. And let's see if we're in the right. Oh, we somehow got a little bit off the. Oh, let's go there. Hey, God, okay. I thought we were going to the chart, but maybe this is more fun than the chart. Okay, so what we're going to do now. Now, the path I lived in the ashram, path I was on, is called Siddha Yoga. And it's based on the idea of Kundalini. Have any of you heard of the word Kundalini? A lot of people, it's hard to understand exactly what it is, but it's the inner energy that can be awakened and that can guide you. And Hatha Yoga, the yoga exercises, help to awaken that energy and you know, hopefully in the right way. And the idea, my guru would give initiation, and you'd have a room full of people having like these amazing mind-blowing experiences. And then the idea is you find your way up. It's okay. No, this is fine. We're going with the flow here, but thank you. They don't want the chart. Maybe it'll come up next. I don't know. And he has them all organized. It's not his fault. Anyway, so the way these yoga exercises, these postures, have any of you ever done yoga? They were created by these sages who, in their meditation, would understand how different postures, different movements of the body would heal things, would evoke feelings of peacefulness, would have, you know, heal the kidney ailments, you know, whatever you have. And they, you know, wrote it down or, you know, continue as an oral tradition. They didn't have, you know, yoga for dummies back then. This was, you know, thousands of years ago. And the point of yoga is to achieve the real yoga, which is the unfolding of your consciousness into the higher consciousness. That's, yoga means union, and it's union with that which you already are, but which you don't probably know that you already are. And it's attaining this union with the universe, the universal oneness. And the postures help, you know, because your body affects your mind, and your mind affects your spirit. It's all connected. So one thing in the ashram, you'd see people when they'd be initiated doing all kinds of movements, and they wouldn't even know why they were doing it. And then you'd find out these are mudras. Like, this is called Chin Mudra. Have any of you ever just done it spontaneously? You know? And when you meditate, you can do this. And what it does, it holds the energy in, because the energy comes out of our hands and our feet. That's why the yogis will sit cross-legged when they meditate. And they'll sit with their hands here with this. And it helps circulate your energy within. And it makes it stronger. And it helps you to meditate more, this spiritual energy. And part of it is letting the universe guide your movements, because inside you also are a sage and you know how to let your body move. So that's what we're going to do. This is drumming from a qawwali, a Sufi ecstatic qawwali. And we're just going to move with it for a few minutes and see how we feel. So you can either sit or stand up, and you can... I would say stand up. And let your body guide you. Let your inner energy make beautiful movements that come from your spirit. This is called Abhaya Mudra. It's the mudra of fearlessness. If you're ever afraid. And you can drink water while you're moving. And these drum beats are also based on ancient ragas from India. Okay, that's all you get. You know, people are always looking for who they are. And a funny thing happened this past week, on Facebook. Some friends got me on it. It's good for a hermit to keep in touch with. You don't have to see them. You can, you know, share with people and keep in touch with everybody. And all of a sudden, you know, I don't know, how many of you are on Facebook? So you see a feed of whatever your friends are doing. You get a news feed of their status report, you know, so-and-so. I'm in Sudbury giving workshops, so my friends see that. But if you put a link for a video, or if you take, they have these quizzes now on Facebook. I don't know who's making them. What color are you? What country are you? What painting are you? So-and-so took this quiz. What country are you? He's Italy. You're romantic. You're like, pasta. I don't know. It's just kind of ridiculous because most of my friends are spiritual people, have been on a spiritual path at least for, you know, years. And you see these people who have studied all this ancient deep philosophy taking these quizzes to find out who the hell they are. It's like, please tell me, anybody, tell me who I am. And we're all like that, aren't we? If someone compliments you, or, you know, it's like we define ourselves by what other people tell us we are. So it's so blatant, and people want someone to, you know, a lot of people come to a spiritual teacher hoping the teacher will tell them who they are, you know? And so I had to kind of poke fun at it, so I wrote a Facebook note in the same announcement format. Sharon took the "What animal turd are you?" quiz, and the answer is rabbit turd. You're small, plentiful, don't smell, and are nourishing to the earth. Got a lot of laughs from that. One woman said, "Oh, are you telling me it's not real? I wanted to take it." So, you know, and people are looking for a path, and there's so many teachers and paths out there. And people will sometimes ask me, as a, you know, spiritual authority, what do you think about this teacher? What do you think about that path? And, you know, whether I have opinions about them or not, my usual response is, well, there's something for everyone. Good politically correct, huh? That usually means I don't like it, by the way, if you ever happen to ask me and you hear that. Because otherwise, like, oh, great. You know, but it's also true. It gives an easy way out, but it's true. There is something for everyone, and there's something for everyone at different times in their journey. So you may have been born into one religion, and it's not quite filling you, but you're still going because that's the thing to do. But, you know, we're in a new age now, a new time, and you can try other things. You can even keep that if you're comfortable with it, but try learning something else. Try studying another philosopher. Try studying some other spirituality. It's an individual process, you know, and that's the point of spirituality. You're finding your right place, and your loyalty has to be ultimately toward that, above trying to please other people. You know, if you're worrying about whether people are going to judge you, it's going to limit your life, and you're here for a reason. You're here to unfold your nature, you know. It might seem narcissistic to focus on your own path, but really it's not. In fact, it allows you to help others much better because you realize that everyone who comes in front of you is part of your path. And so you care about them more. You know, every time I meet people, on, you know, wherever I am, in a store, on a walk, in planes, wherever, there's something, I'm always like, is it, what can we learn? What are we going to learn from each other? What can I give them? What can they tell me? The thing is to add the practices to your life. Read uplifting words. Take pauses for meditation in your life. Even 10-second pauses. 10 seconds. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Amazing. You can do it so easily. When I was in Hollywood, I was looking for how can I bring light to the world. I left the ashram, went straight to Hollywood, and I had a few jobs. My first was editing the TV show Hard Copy, okay? Not so much light, but it was an interesting experience. And it got me to get a job at Disney editing for their news. And, you know, we had a lot of tough stories to cover. And I always tried to, I started producing these little positive pieces. You know, for Thanksgiving, I did a piece called Let's Be Thankful, got actually nominated for an Emmy. And then a couple years after I got there, we had the LA riots, where all of a sudden the Rodney King had been beaten by the cops. The cops were found not guilty, and LA just exploded in this riot, especially in the poorer sections. And I was working in Hollywood at the time. And, you know, I think most of us at work felt really like there was something really sad about what had happened because it didn't seem right. We had watched the footage. When you're working in the news, you saw that beating a lot of times. You know, you watch the same disaster over and over and over again. And then I'm driving home, and all of a sudden, there's gang members running through the streets. And they set a gas station on fire to my right, and they're walking up to cars and smashing their windshields all around me. And I was like, okay. Not the ashram. And they didn't get my car, but it was just shocking. And to see, I had never seen that kind of brute force and this anger and this, oh, it was just so wrong, you know. It was such a sad thing to watch. And I went home and I felt like, well, I want to bring light to this situation. So I called a fellow who composed and sang songs. I had once done a music video for him. And I said, could you write a music video about the riots? I'd like to put something together. And we discussed what message it would have, which was acknowledging the anger, but that from the ashes seeds will grow, for there's good in every man. And I started editing it. It went on the air 7 days after the riots started. And it showed the people, because after a few days, people started going into South Central LA and cleaning up, you know, people from other parts of the town. And so this goodness was coming forth. And when I saw this shot of this one little girl, that's what had really inspired me, this little girl watching what was happening.
Emotions expressed in pictures and music. They are the images and lyrics of unrest, but also of good coming from the bad.
The song is called Fire in the City, and it was composed and sung by Henry Iglesias, and we turned it into this particular photo essay.
Sweeping anger that a wall. With a vengeance that was fierce. With a thousand plumes of smoke. From the wounds of many years, time was ticking like a bomb. In the spring of 92, the night fell hard, the siege was on. The fuse was lit and LA blue. There's a fire in the city. Flames are stretching to the sky. Rain. and said, give peace a chance. If you want a revolution, or you can let the devil have his dance. But there's no violent resolution.
Beautiful piece there, done by Sharon Janis.
Captured well by Sharon. That little girl's eye said
mm-hmm.
it all.
It did. Mm. Very nice.
You know, a lot of times when people get sick or they lose all their money with Bernie Madoff or the economy goes, they lose their job or their girlfriend or boyfriend is cheating on them and wants a divorce and all these tragedies that can come, people say, why me? Very common. Why me? You know, and then some New Ager person will come and say, it's your karma. You hurt someone else before, and now you're getting paid back. Okay. who knows? Maybe that's the case. But it's not really a set idea. So when people say, why me? Why me? Why me? Why did this happen to me? Why me? Why me? I always say, just change the tone of voice and say, why me? Why is the universe, my friend, giving me this situation? What am I supposed to learn? It may be that I didn't have compassion for someone else going through it. I'm always aware, you know, if someone has some trauma, you know, I'm aware not to be challenging to them, not to make it worse, because then you do draw it to yourself, or not to be callous about another person's suffering. And for those of you who are caregivers, you know, your compassion for others is creating more love and more good karma for your own life. But aside from just the karma of who's to blame for this and what did I do, it's more, why me? What can I learn from this? You know, like I drove through the riots, and I thought, well, this is an opportunity when people's emotions are raw and they're more vulnerable and more open to give a spiritual teaching, which is you can turn bad to good by helping. If a tragedy comes, you can draw on all your resources, you know, whatever you have available to you, to remember the level of spirit, to remember the self, to remember there's something beyond just the outer waves of this world that are always coming and going. You know, when I lived in the ashram, I was there for almost 10 years, And I didn't really watch TV. I went to see, I think, one movie. I didn't know what was happening for those 10 years in the world, hardly at all. I worked in video, so occasionally I think we bombed Libya once, and then Michael Jackson's Moon Dance and Princess Diana's Wedding. That was it for the 80s for me. And so when I left, I had a few things missing. You know, I walked into Hollywood with a lot of gaps, you know. And one thing is, though, is that I realized I really hadn't missed that much. You know, the news every day, ooh, breaking news, you know. It's like nuts, breaking news, somebody burped, you know. It's like, what, you know, they just love those banners. And because I was working in the news, I remember how it all started with this breaking disasters. Like all of a sudden, disasters became a great thing because the ratings would go up. And so and for us, if a disaster happened, they would bring in sandwiches and pizza. Because, you know, we had to stay and work through the disaster. So disaster equals pizza. It's a problem. And one day they had brought sandwiches for everybody. There was about 150 people in our newsroom. And I was the only vegetarian in the whole place. I was the only one who did yoga, meditation, guru. I was like the weird one out. Now, of course, everyone does yoga. And I'm glad I didn't wait until they caught up before doing my journey, you know what I mean? They were like, ooh, you do yoga, weird, you know? And so I was sitting in the newsroom eating my vegetarian sandwich when in walked Michael Eisner. You know, he was the president of Disney. And I had read recently that at the time that he had just gotten $50 million that year in just his stock options, you know, not including his salary. So, you know, he hadn't come to visit before, but we were in a disaster and we were getting all good ratings. I don't remember, it was a fire. You know, L.A., we had a lot of disasters, floods, fires, riots, you know. So it was earthquakes. It was one of those. And he came in, and he was talking right near me with the news director. So I could hear what they were saying. And he saw the bag of sandwiches, and he said, oh, great, sandwiches. I haven't eaten anything all day. Are there any vegetarian ones? Turns out he's a total vegetarian. And I thought, I've got the only vegetarian sandwich here. Michael Eisner wants one. And the news director even looked over at me because he knew. And I thought, hey, when else will I have a chance to give half of my sandwich to a multi-billionaire? So I took I'd only eaten half, and I wrapped up the other and gave him half my sandwich, which is proof that it doesn't matter how wealthy you are. When you're in need, you're in need. When you're hungry, you're hungry. When you need spirituality, you need spirituality. Turning challenges into blessings ultimately boils down to trust. It's trusting in the ultimate beneficence of the universe. It's trusting that there is some movement toward good and that we're only seeing a partial view of it. You know? And if the soul's journey is bigger than this life, which most religions believe it is, whether they believe in reincarnation or heaven or whatever, then whatever hardships you go through here may be very well leading to this ultimate beneficence. And for me, it works. I mean, I believe in optimism. You know, they have Murphy's Law, and I have my own law, which is to find the most optimistic view of any situation. And I've gotten pretty good at it. So if any of you are having challenges, let me know. I'll find something something good in it, you know. And I went through a lot of challenges in the past decade, actually. After I left Hollywood, I was sick. I had lost all of my money. I lost my friends, you know. Someone else was telling me she had the same experience. There she is a few years ago. And now her life is better than ever, you know. And sometimes that happens. But you can't see the future. When you're in it, you're like, everything's falling apart, you know? So when I was going through it, the line that came to me was, either you trust God or you don't. This is it. There's a new iPhone game. I just saw it last week. It's called Pocket God. Anyone heard of it? It's a game in your iPhone, and you have a little island with little inhabitants. And you're the God. And if you shake the iPhone, they'll fall off. It'll have an earthquake. They'll drown. If you can send in hurricanes, you can send all kinds of horrible things to them. And it's okay because it's just a game, although we don't know how karma works. You know, you might still not want to do that. But it's funny because that's what people do. They want to, you know, cause damage and let's destroy these people and let's have this horrible thing happen and let's have an earthquake. And so you get to see kind of why God does it. It's his own entertainment. He knows we're just blossoms and leaves on the tree of life. There's more. We're not just these individuals. We're God taking form, you know. And so spiritual practices help to give you peace of mind and heart so that you can start to perceive these other possibilities. It doesn't mean you know exactly why everything's happening, you know, and you'll still have to go through challenges. But you can keep your eye on growing, and that's the dual awareness. You're beyond the level of who did what. You know, you're not blaming except for doing the responsible thing. You know, having compassion doesn't mean that you don't tell when someone's doing something wrong. You know, that's a mistake a lot of people make. You know, if you're trying to protect other people from getting harmed, it doesn't mean you hate the person. It doesn't mean you don't have compassion. A woman came to Dalai Lama and said, you know, I'm really upset because on my way here, I saw a man beating a dog. You know, where's the compassion there? Because Dalai Lama is very into, you know, compassion. And Dalai Lama said, compassion is when you have as much compassion for the man beating the dog as you do for the dog. See, and that's a real spiritual being says things like that that are, oh, original, you know, different idea than we would have thought. But again, it doesn't mean you don't stop the man from beating the dog, you know. A man in Florida, he was in his 80s, he called his son in New York one November day and said to his son, I hate to tell you this, but we've got some troubles in the house. Your mother and I can't stand each other anymore. We're getting a divorce. I've had it. I want to live the rest of my life in peace. I'm just telling you now so you and your sister won't go into shock later after I move out. He hung up, and immediately the son calls the sister in the Hamptons, tells her what happened, and she says, I'll handle this. And she calls and says, don't do anything till we get there. We'll be there Wednesday night. And the father agrees, all right. And he hangs up the phone and hollers to his wife, okay, they're coming for Thanksgiving. Now, what are we going to tell them for Christmas? So, can turn anything into good. Now, I wanted to share a story about a friend of mine, Golda Cohen. She went to her travel agent and said, I want to go to India. And he said, Golda, why would you go to India? You know, it's filthy there. There's animals in the street. It's true. I've seen them. She said, I don't care. I want to go to India. Golda, what if you get sick there? There's no Jewish doctors. Don't give me a hard time. Get me a ticket to India. Fine, fine, Mashuga, crazy. We'll get you the ticket to India. It's in my blood. I may not have practiced it, but it's there. So he's like, fine, fine. He gets her the ticket. She flies long flight to India. Yesterday was easy compared to going to India. Gets off the plane, through customs, walks out into the street and heads straight for an ashram. Doesn't even notice the smells, the animals, nothing. Heads straight for the ashram. And there was a line of people who were waiting to see the guru. And they were waiting patiently. She got right in line, waited for about 2 hours. And as people get to the threshold, they would bow down to the guru for his blessings. Finally, she gets to the front of the line. She goes up to him, and people on each side of her bowed down. She just stood there, looked at him, and he looked back. And then she said, Sheldon, come home. And what I like about this story is that we are all Sheldon and we're all the guru. some people see you one way, some people see you another. You see yourself one way, you see yourself. And of course, family sees us as Sheldon most of the time. They don't see us as the guru usually. Now let's take the laughter and just turn within again. Just close your eyes.
Lord, don't move the mountain. Give me strength to climb. And Lord, don't move my stumbling blocks, but lead me, Lord, around. Our cares we bring unto you. You told us, Lord, that we could. You promised to help those who help themselves, and I believe have mercy, oh Lord. You don't have to move the mountain. Just give me strength to climb. And Lord, don't move my stumbling blocks. Believe me, Lord, around. The way may not be easy. You didn't say, Lord, that it would be. But when our tribulations are too light, we tell to stray from thee. Have mercy, oh please. Don't move the mountain. Just give me strength to climb. Lord, don't move my stumbling blocks. Believe your child arise.
So now we're going to have a short meditation and just feel in your own life the mountains you've had to climb. And the strength you've had to climb them. Watch your breath.